Welcome to the Pinstripe Alley podcast, where we're now a full week into the regular season, and the Yankees have played several games. They've lost some games, and they've won some games, and they've also lost some players already, because why not? They went through spring training with way too much health for that to last much longer, so we were gifted with injuries to Mark Teixeira and David Robertson. So, that's good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, interesting enough, Mark Teixeira's, not his wrist, but his, was it his hamstring?
Yeah.
Or his groin. I'm probably messing up between Robertson and Teixeira.
Teixeira was hamstring and Robertson was groin.
Right. His groin, that's what I thought.
By the way, Matt and Andrew are here. Hello.
Hello.
No time for introductions. Hello. We need to go straight into the match.
Right
too much baseball.
I mean, I'm glad baseball is back in full force. It's just unfortunate that, you know, just get immediately smacked in the face by the injuries. Fortunately, there's nothing too bad yet.
Yeah, I think it could be much worse. I mean, look at the Angels lost Josh Hamilton for 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, could be much worse. Bobby Parnell lost from the Mets for probably the whole season. Then you have like 15 different Tommy John surgeries around Major League Baseball.
Yeah, was it the Braves that lost like two pitchers to Tommy John?
They lost. Who was it? So far, Miner's out for like a month, but then they lost Medlin to
right.
Tommy John.
Tommy John, yeah, Medlin to Tommy John. Wasn't there someone else on their staff that they lost to Tommy John?
It may have been a prospect? I'm not sure. No, I think they just lost Medlin because then they signed Santana in response to losing him.
Maybe, yeah.
And then you have Teon with the Pirates, Corbin with the Diamondbacks.
Who won the Pirates? Saw that one.
Who was, you know, really supposed to take up the mantle for them and sort of fill and just like fill the place of AJ Burnett, and that's not gonna happen, so.
Nope.
You're looking at big problems.
Looks like Matt Moore might need Tommy John surgery too.
Yep, there's that as well.
Luke Shaver.
Yep, Dr. James Andrews is getting mighty busy.
Well, Brandon Beachy, that's who I was thinking of. Did he have?
Oh yeah.
He had Tommy John surgery, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, it's a hot mess. Hopefully the Yankees don't have to have anyone go through Tommy John surgery, but.
Yeah,
so if this is just everyone getting 2013 out of their system.
Yeah.
The Great Purge.
It's just so unfortunate that right now the injuries to Teixeira and Robertson have left just gaping holes. Especially, you know, at first base where the current players on the roster have what, a combined maybe 6 games of professional experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the only depth behind them is Russ Kanzler.
Yeah.
And EPA's finest.
It's true.
Yeah, he is from around here. He's a local kid playing on the AAA team.
From the same place as Joe Maddon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. And Kelly Johnson's inexperience at first base is really on display Wednesday night. That pickoff play where he just whiffed.
Yeah.
And also there was a play where he wasn't covering the bag when he should have been.
Yeah.
And it left the base open. So they're like, yeah, they're problems. I mean, his bat's been decent, so I mean, there's that.
Yeah, and there's no alternative right now.
Yeah, they're not going to have Russ Kanzler play first base.
No.
They're not going to dig any deeper. They're not. I mean, I guess this kind of just shows, like, why didn't they sign Mark Reynolds?
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a mystery.
I don't really know. Or even Lyle Overbay.
I'm not that heartbroken about not re-signing Lyle Overbay. Reynolds could have been useful, though, because he only signed for something really low.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if you're going to sign someone to a minor league contract, like, you know he's about a replacement level, like, it's better than getting something worse than that, I mean, unless they think that it's just if Johnson gets hurt or someone else gets hurt, then what?
Then they probably bring up Russ Kanzler.
Oh, that's going to, I'm hoping that day does not come.
Yeah. Yeah, first base depth, we were kind of worried about, you know, going into the season because they didn't really do anything to address it, and they were just kind of being like, well, hopefully Teixeira will be healthy, and I mean, it was kind of a fluky injury because, you know, it's turf, and he just took a bad step and hurt a hamstring. That just happens. It's just unfortunate that it kind of reared its ugly head already. Have they said how long they think he'll be out since he has a grade 1 strain?
I mean, the timeline for grade 1 strains are usually about 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, so probably May.
I would assume then, but you never know. Yeah, I mean, that's what I would make that guess, but it could get tricky because if he starts to rebuild his strength back and then gets caught up in his rehab, then it could be an extra week or two. I mean, look at last year when they would say a timeline, we're like, all right, let's take that timeline and add a month to it.
Yeah.
So whenever they say some timeline of return, I'm just going to take it as a soft return because I have no idea. And like, they have to go back to swinging. They have to go back to simulated games. And like, I would say, I'd say May.
Yeah. Teixeira will have his second straight year spending random games at the Trenton Thunder. But maybe rehabbing that injury will make him, I don't know, less concerned about, like, the wrist, and maybe he'll trust it more because he's trying to rehab another part of his body, because he was, like, going on about, like, oh, I don't know how much I'll trust my wrist, and he's, like, going back and forth and being all weird about it.
Yeah, but the thing is that concerns me is, on one hand, I'm happy that it'll give him time to rest it, but at the same time, I kind of don't want that, because he was saying in the interviews that the only way he'll know if it's better is if he takes a real-time swing and is able to take a big hack and it is fine.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to really know that until he comes back.
Yeah.
So I think he may still have that uncertainty until he comes back. Or he may come back and just realize the second he swings, oh, I'm fine again.
It wasn't the baby's wrist I was born with.
What a weird thing to say.
The weirdest quotes. I miss his glove, though.
Yeah, that would be kind of nice to have right now. Mm-hmm.
Like, I think on that ball, might have been in, like, I think it was the eighth inning, where Johnson couldn't make the play on that. It was on the barehanded throw by Solarte. It would have been a tough play anyway, but I think there's a chance that Teixeira might have been able to reach and scoop it. But
yeah, he was pretty good at scooping, and he was good at making that backhanded stab. That was always his thing.
I mean,
memories.
He wasn't even hitting in his couple games back in the lineup anyway, so.
Yeah.
That's true. So I guess we could talk about who is hitting in the lineup, and that would be, we could talk about Yanhervis Solarte.
Yes, he is hitting, at least until the last at-bat of Wednesday night's game.
Yep, but he has been tearing it up, and like, some of them have been cheapies, but some of them have been like, he absolutely ripped it against the wall.
Yeah, David Cohn was talking about that in the broadcast. He's like, you know, there have been a couple ones that were bloops, and maybe the double in Houston that was like, he hustled it out, but for the most part, he's been hitting the ball hard.
Yeah, there have been a couple that squeaked through. Yeah, but I think that, I don't really know what to think of that. Like, that could be deceiving, that could fool people into thinking that that's going to continue.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm just taking it for what it's worth. I mean, I'm very appreciative of it because, again, there aren't that many people in the lineup that are hitting right now. And yes, he's probably just getting through, like, you know, first exposure to big league pitching. They don't know what to do with him yet, so he's taking advantage of that. And that's probably not going to last, but it's very welcome that it's happening now because other than him, it's like Ellsbury and Beltran had a breakout game today, but before that, he was kind of slumping. McCann has looked as bad as, like, Mark Teixeira typically looks at the beginning of the season. I don't think I've seen McCann hit a single ball hard. Has he had, like, a double yet? He might have. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he had a double, and he's hit a ball hard. He's just hit, like, right into the shift.
Yeah, and that kind of worries me, because, you know, I'm sure they were shifting last year when he was on the Braves, and I wasn't watching, like, many Braves games at all last year, so I don't know how much people were shifting against him, but it seems like every single ball is hit, it's gone right into the shift, so I just don't know if maybe, well, is this small sample size weirdness? It probably is, but
yeah, it's just BABIP weirdness. Like, for every ball that gets hit into the shift, there's like the same ball that lands in between the shift and over the shift, and I mean, his BABIP will regress pretty quickly to what it traditionally is, if he's hitting the ball.
And he hasn't popped the dinger yet, either.
No, that...
Nope.
At least Beltran finally got one.
Yeah, that was a no-doubter.
Yeah.
That was huge.
Took the Yankees long enough to start homering. They went and I think they went their first six or seven games without homering before Gardner went deep in Toronto.
Yeah, it was the sixth game, the third one in Toronto, I think.
Yeah, I mean they're not going to be a huge home run hitting team, but they're gonna hit their fair share, I think.
I think they have decent power bats in the lineup because when healthy, McCann, Teixeira, and Beltran all have at least 20 homer power. At Soriano too.
Yeah, Soriano, but he'll strike out like 250 times.
He will, but he's an older player, and hitting homers is basically his only great skill at this point. So I'll take them for when we get them. And he was also an awful streak at the start of the year. He was what, like 1-for-19 or something, and he's.
And like ten of them were strikeouts.
Yeah. I think I tweeted this from the Pinstripe Valley account, but like when Soriano is like red hot, like he was for most of the second half, then it's amazing. But when he's ice cold, he just looks like the worst hitter in the world. He's chasing everything.
Yeah, there was like that week during the summer last year where he hit like it was like he had like 15 at bats and like five were home runs.
Yeah.
And then it's like, now it's like he'll have 20 at-bats and like 15 of them are strikeouts.
Yeah, some of those strikeouts in Houston and Toronto, those pitchers weren't even close to the strike zone. It's like he just decided before the pitch even came, all right, I'm just going to swing on this one. Doesn't even matter where it is.
Yeah, when I used to watch the game when I was little with my parents, and I was watching the game again with my parents last week, and my mom had not realized that the Yankees had re-signed Soriano, and she had not seen him play since he had played in 2003. And her nickname for him when we were watching the 2003 playoffs was Strikeyano.
Got him.
because of how often he would strike out like that, like foolishly.
Yeah, and the 2003 playoffs were not kind to him. That's another example of like when Soriano was cold, because he was terrible.
Yeah,
that whole playoff.
That was horrible.
Yeah, that was the postseason when at one point he was so bad that Joe Torre benched him during the World Series. And this is when like his backup was Enrique Wilson, and it's not like they were playing Pedro Martinez. Ooh. They're just like no.
The dark time.
Yeah. But anyway,
I mean,
sorry. Go ahead.
I have always personally found it a little hard to blame players for striking out. I mean, I know it's their job, but for me personally, when I play, like, any baseball video game, I swing at everything because I just don't know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, plate discipline's probably one of the hardest things for a major league hitter.
Definitely. That's why it's so good to see it in, like, prospects when they do have, like, high walk rates.
Yeah.
Greg Bird.
Yes, Greg Bird also strikes out a lot. He's more of an... He's kind of not... I don't want to say, like, an Adam Dunn type. He doesn't strike out that much, but he seems to be kind of a three true outcomes prospect.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, I mean, if he develops how we want him to develop, I'd be fine with that.
I'd be fine with a position player developing.
Yeah, I like in the minor league recap post how everyone's like predicting what the roster's gonna look like in like 5 years, and everyone thinks it's gonna be like Bird at first, Cato at second. Culver is short. Solarte at third.
Yeah, the one guy who's like, yes. 2017 Yankees, Solarte at third. He's going to be there. The funny thing is that
and
by then he'll be like 30.
Yeah, I'd be happy if one of those worked out. Mm-hmm.
It's been so long. Like, who will be in the next core for? Solarte.
Nobody.
Solarte, Shane Green, and Dietrich Enns.
No, it'll the core four will just be like Solarte, Dean Anna, and like and it'll just be like players that are picked up in like Rule 5 drafts and stuff like that.
Bruce Billings.
Bruce Billings, core four. Danny Barawa.
And Chase Whitley.
Oh, yes, Chase Whitley. Ugh. Chase Whitley.
and the number one starting pitcher, and he'll pitch in Game 7 of the World Series in 2021, it'll be Robert Coelho.
Robert Coelho will be lucky to be pitching on a farm in 2021. To his son, like in The Natural, and he'll homer off him.
Yeah, son, a few years back, I pitched for the New York Yankees, let up 10 home runs in 11 innings.
Like, no, you never pitched for the Yankees. No, it was spring training. Oh, well, no one cares about that.
That doesn't count. Well, I guess we can talk about the bullpen, then.
The bullpen.
Yay.
I did write an article the other day about how I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll figure some way around this. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that, again, losing David Robertson seemingly out of nowhere to a 15-day DL stint, just kind of like a shot to the knee for the bullpen, because Robertson is so important and was really the only truly trustworthy reliever out there. I mean, Kelly had a good year last year, but, you know, he was just designated for assignment 14 months ago by the Mariners. And everyone else is in one of his first few seasons. And then there's Matt Thornton, going to only get lefties, probably. And then some starters.
Yeah, I don't trust relievers, period. Like, I just don't. I just don't like relievers. Relievers are not, like, they're not starters for a reason. Like, there's no one that, like, very few pitchers come up as relief prospects. They all usually come up as starting pitching prospects, and then teams realize they're not good enough to be starters. So, like, off the bat, they're already a flawed product. And very few of them are successful for a long period of time. So, like, Robertson's an exception, but the rest of them, yeah, they have, like, Thornton had a couple of good years. Kelly's had one good year. I don't trust them at all. Like, they could be gone. And look at last year, like, the Red Sox. They had, like, their bullpen was completely different.
Right.
It was like Bailey, Hanrahan, and some other people. And now it's, like, completely different. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Tozawa got hurt, Uehara struggled, someone else came up and then became the setup. Like, it could completely change in the season.
The Yankees bullpen has had a bunch of changes over the past few years. That's actually one of the reasons why I wrote that I was cautiously optimistic about the bullpen, because Joe Girardi has managed to conjure good seasons of, like, Corey Wade, Cody Eplid, Clay Rapata, Alfredo Aceves, Brian Bruni, all these guys who aren't really that good relievers, but he managed to find a way to make it work. So maybe he can find a way to make it work with this crop. And, you know, from the small bits we've gotten from, like, Adam Warren, certainly inspired some confidence. I mean, he left some pitches over the plate, but as Cone said, he's able to escalate his velocity in these shorter outings, so maybe that helps.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if Warren kind of settles into a relief role, especially with the sixth starter kind of just being David Phelps.
Yeah, and we're just in an, even though we can try to mentally prepare for life beyond Mariano Rivera's security blanket, it's still going to take some getting used to.
Yep.
Like, when the Yankees, so, you know, they were tied in the eighth inning. I'm like, all right, well, you know, they'll just get some scoreless innings and then hopefully have a chance to win the bottom of the left. Like, not such a lock that there will be scoreless innings from the bullpen.
Turns out, yeah. Sean Kelly is not Mo.
I know. It was a tough revelation.
What a surprise. Yeah, it's just like, we're just so spoiled because they're just so used to being like, oh, it's the top or the bottom of the ninth inning. Mariano's coming in. It literally feels like a security blanket. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. It's this nice comfort. Like, ah, he'll come in. He'll just get the outs. And, you know, it's not even just that he gets the outs. It's that he doesn't make you sweat for it. Like, even relievers who are pretty dominant. I remember even Billy Wagner was pretty notorious for this. Like, Billy Wagner was great, but he always got into a jam in the ninth inning.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what Fernando Rodney kept doing.
Yeah, and Jose Valverde was another one. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a common attribute of a closer. Like, because it's so high leverage, you get into these big jams, and you have to kind of weave your way out of it. And, like, Mariano just didn't. It was either, like, he got the three outs directly in a row, or he let up a home run, the game was over.
He didn't throw many balls.
No, and if he got and there were hits, they were either home runs or they were cheapies.
Yeah, broken bat.
No, in between.
Broken bat, bloop single.
Broken bat, bloop single, or just a 475-foot home run that ended the game.
Except that didn't happen that often.
No, it didn't happen that often, but if it did, it was like definitive. It was like either he put the game to sleep either way.
Mm-hmm. I liked Thornton today. He did pretty well against Chris Davis. He fell behind 3-0. That was weird, but then struck him out. So, or did he strike him out, or did he just get like a pop up? I forget.
I think he struck him out.
He struck him out. So, you know, Thornton's good enough to get Chris Davis out. I think he's probably good enough to get pretty much any lefty in the league out, I would think.
Yeah, I think he's so suitable. Like, he's just going to be a loogie. I mean,
there are worse fates.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
So it is kind of weird right now having three lefties in the bullpen, but, you know, that's just what the Yankees have to work with at the moment.
Just pretty thin, but that works in stark contrast to the starting pitching, which is actually pretty deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much everyone has pitched well so far, I would say. CC is up and down, but he was pretty good in his last start.
Yeah, he just had the one like he really just had the one bad inning. That was it.
Tanaka, it was kind of funny because Tanaka didn't have superb command today, but he still struck out 10 and went 7 innings.
Yeah,
and he still only walked one. And he still so it's like oh his command wasn't on.
And he still
only
made the
one
mistake to scope, which was almost a foul ball, but instead was a third over.
Yeah, so I think he did pretty well. I mean, yeah, 10 strikeouts, 1 walk, 7 hits. That's not bad.
That's not bad for an off day.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I think he's going to be kicking, like, knowing, like, from what I've heard about him, I'm sure he's, like, kicking himself because of that one mistake.
Probably.
Yeah.
Just getting, yeah, because I know he probably thinks that cost the game. I mean,
well, even on the one. Even on the one, he got like a pop out, but it was a pitch that was left up in the zone. And after, even though the guy was out, you'd still see him like shaking his head, upset that he left it up there.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was to Bautista. He left a hanging splitter, and he popped, and he just fouled it back, and he got
no,
mad.
I mean tonight.
Oh, it was tonight.
I forget who hit it.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's like really. That's what I like about him. He's really intense.
Yeah.
Maybe to a fall, I don't know.
I can see the Kuroda comparisons, because Kuroda is very unperturbed on the mound, and Tanaka strikes out more than Kuroda, with almost the same effectiveness as Kuroda, I would say.
Yeah, it's weird, because they have like a similar repertoire.
Tanaka's just slightly like similar. 10 years younger.
Yeah, and he throws a little faster, and he's got better, the control's similar.
Yeah. Kuroda's looked pretty good so far, too, I should say.
He looks like Hirok. Like,
I'll take first half Hirok.
Yeah, I'm first half Hirok all the way. I just to hope they don't like stretch him out, and because I think the last game, like you could tell after the sixth inning, it was like, all right, I think he's done.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the problem with having a bullpen that's so thin. It's like then they wheel him out for the seventh.
Mm-hmm.
When he's really not prepared to pitch the seventh.
Yeah, and right now they might just have to roll with him in the seventh if they feel if they think he's going okay. Because again, like even though I've said I have some confidence in bullpen, at the end of the day, I think I'll still have more confidence in pretty much any of the starters than anyone coming out of the bullpen, unless the starter just doesn't look good at all. Like Nova the other day. Actually, I should backtrack of what I said a couple minutes ago about how everyone in the rotation has looked good, because Nova has been,
yeah.
He's looking like first half Nova.
2012 Nova. Beginning. Hopefully it's just a rocky start.
Yeah, I mean, he's got such a good curveball. I can't imagine him just being terrible.
Yeah, everyone has bad starts now and again. Maybe his are just coming early.
Yeah, I mean, I think it happens. I don't really think it's... I mean, look at Sabathia, a terrible start in the first team.
Yeah, and he got bombed by the Astros, and it's just like, what are you doing?
How many innings did Nova pitch, though?
Like three and a third?
Three and two-thirds.
I mean, other than that start, I think like every starter went like six-plus.
Yeah, I think they had to go
think
five.
Nova, his first start, went like five and two-thirds or something.
Yeah. But they've been getting a lot of depth. Because, I mean, to be honest, like innings one through seven, I'm pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
So I think I put a little too much emphasis on the bullpen because it like ends the game, but I think it's pretty solid that the first like seven innings are pretty much covered, or to some degree.
Wonderful system, complete games while D-Rod's out.
They need one. I mean, I guess the problem is that they have like 13 straight games in a row.
Yeah, that was kind of unfortunate timing and scheduling and kind of weird, but that's the hand you're dealt. So. Yeah. Now they have to do four straight games against the Red Sox with this bullpen.
Yeah.
That should be fun.
Tons of fun.
So are they going to... Maybe they should just go all 2005 ALCS where the White Sox use, like, one relief pitcher.
That would be nice.
Or they could pull... Or they could pull 2005 regular season, if I'm not mistaken. That was the year when they won five straight games against the Red Sox.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that was 2006. They swept the five games.
2006, yeah. There was like a doubleheader as part of a four-game set, and they won all five games.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And I remember thinking right before the series started, I'm like, oh, it'd be cool if they won all five games. That'd be awesome, winning a five-game series.
Yeah. But I think, so tonight being Thursday night, they'll have Pineda against Buchholz.
That's correct.
And who's starting the rest of the games? I guess then it goes back to the front.
Go in order. It would be Sabathia. Yeah,
so Sabathia game two, Kuroda game three, and Nova in game four.
Nova game four. Yeah, that'd be correct.
All right. So I guess probably, and I guess the Red Sox pitchers would be after Buchholz, Lester, Lackey. It'd be easier just to look.
I'm just gonna look up probable pitchers.
Yeah.
It's like the only thing MLB.com is good for is the probable pitchers list. Yeah. So Thursday is Buchholz and Pineda. Friday is Lester and Sabathia. Saturday is Lackey Kuroda. And Sunday is Dubront Nova.
Mm. Dubront is their Nova.
That's true. This is a pretty even matchup, actually, pitching-wise.
PV is still hurt, right?
Yes.
Because, of course.
Because PV.
Forget what he did. Whatever.
He has a curse on him for the Indian thing from last year.
God, that was so stupid.
Ugh. Well, I mean, this series should be interesting, and at least the pitching matchups aren't lopsided at all.
No, and that's good. Yeah. It's a nice change of pace from last season when it was like, who do I trust? First half Kuroda, second half Nova, and that's about it.
And CeCe would bomb it. I saw one game. I saw Lester Sabathia last year on May 31st. And that was like the one game the whole season CeCe threw well against the Red Sox. And he threw like seven shutout innings against Lester.
Nice.
But other than that, that was pretty much
it. Yeah, CeCe wants to do that. I won't say no.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, that was nice.
And the Red Sox, did they just... They lost two out of three to the Rangers, I think? Or did they win two out of three?
I believe they lost three. I'll check. Again, to the internet.
Yes.
Like, they have the same record as the Yankees right now, I believe.
Four and five. Yeah, they won two out of three from the Rangers after being swept by the Brewers.
Yeah, I remember they got swept by the Brewers at Fenway, and that was hilarious.
That's brutal. I mean, they did have to face, you know, Gallardo and, but
still the Brewers. And
I mean, the Brewers aren't terrible. Like, the Brewers are not that bad. They're probably a near 500 team, give or take 10 games. You know?
I don't think so. I think the Brewers are like in the mid 70s.
You think so? I mean,
they're not a team that you want to get swept by at home.
No. I think that you want to win two out of three. It's not like the Astros where you want to like. You expect to sweep them, you know?
What do you mean? I thought the Astros were a powerhouse that you probably will lose 2 out of 3 to.
That Trafalgar AL MVP.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
He got hurt already or something.
He had too many doubles.
Didn't he he went home with like an infection or something.
Of course he did.
Let's see. To the internet again.
That would make sense that he did right after destroying the Yankees.
My work here is done.
He contracted a virus. this is funny. This is hilarious. So it said, it said, today is the first day I feel like I have some strength to do anything, Fowler said before the game. I think returning Wednesday is what we're looking at. Hopefully I'll be back there. It's just dependent on how today goes. He continues to say how he doesn't know how much weight he lost because of a stomach virus that kept him out for 5 games. He did, however, have a basic meal on Tuesday. Actually, I had my first meal today so far at State Inn. I had some eggs. I also ate some bacon, but I couldn't do bacon. My wife wouldn't let me.
Wow.
So apparently he contracted some terrible stomach virus that had him puking for 5 straight days.
Franklin Gutierrez disease?
That's actually really serious.
Yeah.
Franklin Gutierrez disease is like, that's a real problem medically.
Yeah.
But this was like, he obviously just caught a virus, now he can't eat bacon. And his wife wouldn't let him eat bacon.
An atrocious fall. Who do the Yankees have after the Red Sox? Are they playing? I think they're playing the Cubs.
They play 2 games
against
the Cubs.
It's so weird.
It's because the way, you know, the new divisions. Yeah, they have to have at least an interleague game every day. And then they play 4 games against the Rays.
It's just weird that they play two games against the Cubs. And then they have their first day off, right?
No, then they go straight to the Trop and they play 4 games against the Rays.
Oh, well, never mind.
Because then it ends. Then the whole 13-game stretch ends after they finish the series with the Rays.
And then they nap.
From a mistake. Oh, no. There's a day off in between the Red Sox series and the Cubs.
Oh, okay. Well, there's the one day off.
Yeah. The one day off is April 14th.
That's a Monday, I think.
Yeah, it's a Monday.
Yeah.
That's good.
So they're almost there.
I'm afraid of what that Monday will hold, because if the series against the Red Sox doesn't go well, then it'll be a very angry Monday. Because, when you have a crappy game, not so much a crappy game, but, when you have a game that's just really frustrating and annoying, like tonight's game was against the Orioles, then you just want them to get back as soon as possible, just to, wash the taste of that game out.
Yeah, like what happened with Saturday and Sunday.
Yes.
I feel like this game is worse, though, than getting completely blown out.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you get completely blown out, you can just kind of easily brush that off. So, like, oh, that happens.
Yeah, like, when Nova exploded, I was just like, well.
Yeah, these type of games happen. But, like, these type of games are the ones that are kind of, like, really annoying. They got under your skin because, like, well, they could have won that one.
Yes. It was eminently winnable.
And that kind of bothers me because this kind of plays into the whole Pythagorean record, because these are the type of games they won last year and they really shouldn't have.
Right. Now, that's the that was the benefit of having a bullpen that included both Mariano Rivera and David Robertson.
Yep. And some luck too, I think.
Yeah, obviously. Had some of that.
Pythagorean records, a lot of luck.
But what's funny is that around Baltimore, I sometimes listen to the sports radio stations, and sometimes they talk about, like, oh, the Orioles have got to get back to where they were in 2012 with playing well in one-run games, and I'm just like, you can't really bank on that.
Doesn't really work. Baseball does not work that way.
I mean, admittedly, the Orioles lost a lot of one-run games last year, but, you know, that's just, you know, the other side of the coin.
That's literally like saying they should be better at flipping coins at heads. It doesn't work that way.
They should be better at conjuring miracle, 50 save seasons out of Jim Johnson? I think that's how many saves he had in 2012.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be better at luck. They should be much better at winning the lottery.
God, pick the right numbers. Yeah. Well, they'll power through it. What have you guys thought of how Jeter's looked so far?
He fields pretty terrible, but he like behind the plate, he looks like
Derek Jeter. Yeah, he seems to be doing relatively well at the plate, about as well as we could have hoped. He should in that double that was almost a homer the other day. He can still get a hold of a pitch. Kind of hits the opposite field too, which has always been his specialty. But as Matt F. just mentioned, he has looked like a complete rock in the field.
Past the diving Jeter,
it's not even a diving Jeter, just a falling over Jeter on like a thousand hopper that Delmon Young hit. It's like, how was that not fielded?
But what's funny enough is that Fangraphs is actually rated his defensive runs above average as 0.3 and not negative because of the shift.
Mm, yeah. And also because, you know, 8 games or whatever.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, like, it gives him more credit because of the shift because he was, like, playing in a different slot.
Yeah.
So his defensive metrics, because now the Yankees are shifting a lot, is going to be completely different.
Yeah, going to be real screwy.
Because basically what's going to happen is if he's playing, like if the lefty comes up to the plate and he ends up playing behind second base, the defensive metric will count as if he ranged from short to over second.
Right. Yeah, I noticed they've been doing some funky shifts where, you know, sometimes Jeter is the only guy on the left side and like the third baseman will move over to his right, seems like, I think.
Well, I guess that would address one of the tweet bag questions.
Yeah, well, we'll get to the tweet bag when we get to the tweet bag.
Because yeah, we'll come back to it because one of the tweet bag questions is about overshifting.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what else is there. Like how Ellsbury started.
He's playing like Ellsbury 2011.
Yeah. Like he wasn't good in the first series, but then against the Blue Jays, he's like, I'm just going to get every hit.
All of the hits.
Yeah, it's really refreshing to see, you know, the difference between like Ellsbury and Gardner on the bases because both are like elite runners, but you can definitely see the difference in Ellsbury's base running abilities because as Tanya has alluded to in many of the comments, Ellsbury doesn't wait around. He just steals. Gardner sometimes his biggest problem on the bases has been hemming and hawing a bit too much and then not actually stealing. Ellsbury just goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one caught stealing that Ellsbury had, he was actually safe.
True.
I found out he's stolen 51 of his past 55 stolen bases.
Holy moly. If he steals 50 bags like he did last year, well... Yes.
I would be okay.
More of that. More of that. I think the other thing that I like is, like, I guess we're so used to in the outfield seeing characters like Granderson and Swisher and...
Vernon Wells.
He's just, like... he's just, like, completely different than those players where he's more deadly than them, and he just does it in so many different ways.
They're still all contact hitters at the top of the lineup, and I'm just not really sure where you would put Gardner otherwise if you have Ellsbury leading off, or where you put Jeter otherwise if you have Gardner batting second behind him. Then you're still getting all your best hitters at the front of the lineup rather than having to push Gardner or Jeter down toward the lineup and having to bat lesser hitters ahead of them, I guess.
I mean, I don't really care about batting Jeter lower in the lineup. I mean, but if I'm Joe Girardi, I can't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of I guess I criticize it, but at the same time, I understand why, because I know that, like, the first question I'll get asked by the reporters, like, why is Jeter batting seventh or whatever?
Yeah. Like the whole stink when Posada batted ninth.
Or if you remember when Joe Torre batted A-Rod, like, eighth in the lineup.
Oh, well, that was just idiotic.
in the playoffs.
Yeah, don't need him.
Like to teach him a lesson. Like. And what year was that? That was 2000.
That was 2007.
That was
2006.
That was 2006, yeah. And they were, like,
against
that was,
the
like,
Tigers, right?
And he was, like, literally tearing it up that year.
I think that was like, actually, I think that was like the year between the two MVP years where he was still, you know, even down year A-Rod hit 35 homers.
Yeah.
It's that guy. Kind of.
So, yeah. I guess I have to, I can side with him there because then, like, everyone's just going to be asking questions. And, like, it just takes away from the actual game.
Right. Either way, I try not to worry too much about lineup construction because they'll all eventually bat anyway, pretty much.
Yeah, kind of. It's just like, it just bothers me because if you optimize it correctly, you can get an extra couple of wins. And the Yankees could use those win things.
Win things? Who knows? Let's see. I think that's about it as far as main topics go. Can you think of anything else?
I think we covered all of the big ones.
Yeah. Can't think of anything else.
Okay. So, jump into the tweet bag. I don't think we had any questions on Twitter, so we'll just go straight into the site questions. LTL wants to know, will they ever ban the overshift? As it takes away hits, will baseball decide that it's hurting hitters too much and ban teams from overshifting? I think that would be kind of difficult to enforce, so yeah. I don't think they would ever ban the overshift. I think the onus would just be on the hitters to, you know, adjust for hit over the shift.
What I think is going to happen, I don't know why teams haven't done this, I just think the bunt's going to just start happening.
Like that one play last year where Robinson Cano just dragged a punt for a double.
Yeah, I would not be. I mean, I think that coaches are going to teach their players how to bunt well, and they're going to say if there's a shift, bunt. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they'll have to kind of be honest about it. And, you know, because if it's like a 50% success rate with that, so like do it if that's going to happen. I just think that it's kind of the same way. It would be like if you bunted and, like, you showed bunt every single at-bat and the third baseman never, like, it would be like if you showed bunt every time, the third baseman came all the way down the third baseline, you wouldn't keep bunting.
Right.
Because you know the third baseman's right there. Eventually, you'd stop bunting and the third baseman would move back and then you would bunt. So, like, you have to kind of keep the defense honest, and I think that eventually that's going to happen. So I think they're going to make their own adjustments.
Yeah.
I think that the bigger threat to offense is just pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, if Major League Baseball is going to make any adjustments to hurting hitters, it's going to be the mound height or something like that.
I agree.
If they feel that, because they could, if this continues with, like, more strikeouts and, like, faster velocity, I wouldn't be surprised if Major League Baseball said, you know what, we're just going to change the mound height. This is getting too crazy.
Yeah, I don't see the overshift going anywhere.
Yeah, no. I just can't see how you could, as Andrew said, enforce that. You're going to restrict someone, you don't only move 10 feet from this designated area. Like, I don't know.
Yep. Anyway, so that's that. Second question, or kind of a paragraph, but that's okay. From Aaron Shelby Rose, with Solarte off to his ludicrously productive start, how applicable are his minor league numbers to projecting the mean to which he will inevitably regress? Once teams get some tape on him, the numbers will come down, but is there any statistical precedent for knowing whether we will be treating him like Nunez or Kleyborn by July?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that his minor league numbers, I've referenced them during spring training a lot, and while, you know, they kind of sometimes got tossed back in my face because he made the team because he had a good camp and Nunez was awful, I think that is eventually the kind of player that he's going to come back toward. I mean, he's playing in the Pacific Coast League the past two seasons and he only had a 92 WRC+. So his true talent level in the major leagues, I mean, he's hit the ball hard, and I'll give him credit for, you know, he's obviously a better player than Nunez, and I definitely think that he deserved a spot on the team, especially given that Scott Sizemore wasn't ready, and he's played better than Dean Anna so far as well. But I think his minor league numbers are just going to be more predictive than any small sample size weirdness we see early on.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you. It's just the only problem with using minor league statistics, especially weighted runs created plus, is that minor league weighted runs created plus is not park adjusted because there are no park factors available for those parks.
Right, but they still like adjust for like the league.
They still adjust for the league, but like for example, Deanna's minor league stats are like pretty inflated because he played in a very hitter-friendly park, so you couldn't regress to that because that wouldn't work. So I mean, I'm gonna say it's gonna regress generally, but you gotta add at plus or minus 10 points really.
Yeah, I think. I mean,
so he could be a league average hitter. He could be 10% below. He could also be, you know, 20% below.
Yeah, made sense.
And like the projections pretty much reflect that because I guess you have the two steamer projections and the two plus. So again, kind of a range of about 12 points.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like a recent comparison to Solarte's hot start. I mean, Zoila got off to a really good start last year, obviously, and he kind of fell back down a little bit. And
yeah, Eduardo Nunez's early 2011.
Yeah, when no? Eduardo Nunez Eduardo Nunez was filling in for Derek Jeter, I think that was around when people were like, hey, maybe he could be the successor because he had a few hot weeks there. But
yeah. And Nunez's minor league statistics are kind of similar to Solarte's. Mm-hmm. I guess only difference being his defense isn't horrible. It depends. I mean, the difference is that Solarte was a little more consistent in the minor leagues, while Nunez had moments in the minors where he was just tearing it up, and then other times in the minors where he was just horrible.
And Nunez didn't actually have that much time at AAA either.
No, he didn't. Well, he did in 2010. He played 118 games at AAA, and he was about league average. But then in 2012, he went back down. He played 38 games. He had a 46 weighted runs created plus.
Yeah, he was terrible.
Absolutely. So the thing is as bad as as much as we like to think that Solarte's going to regress that far, I don't think he's going to regress as far as Nunez does, just because there are really no minor league stats for Solarte that are that bad. Like, all the samples are pretty consistent, which is, I guess, a good thing, that we have an idea.
Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree Solarte greater than Nunez.
Yeah, that's pretty widely. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a high bar.
Yeah, Solarte's already accumulated more WAR than Nunez's career total, so. By how much more? Oh, about 2.5 more, actually, because because Nunez's career total is negative 1.9.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that we have more WAR than Eduardo Nunez.
Oh, yeah, we are more valuable to New York Yankees than Eduardo Nunez.
I think the only person that might not be in the world is, like, Tony Womack and maybe Enrique Wilson, too.
That's possible, yeah. But basically, Nunez should have paid the Yankees to play. Should have paid them about $10 million for playing.
Yeah. So Larte is just kind of, he's an interesting experiment going on here, and I certainly don't fault the Yankees at all for trying him, because he's the hot hand, so you want, you know, try to play the hot hand. The only alternative is Dean Anna. I don't expect him, this is going to be a hot take, but I don't think he's going to hit 400.
No, I do not think so.
I think he'll regress to maybe, at best, around league average.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, the Yankees did not even have a league average, like, hitter in, the infield, basically, last year, except for Cano.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and at worst, he regresses as quickly as David Adams did.
Ooh, that would be ugly.
And he doesn't, Solarte doesn't really walk. He doesn't strike out, but he doesn't really walk either.
That's true, that's definitely a red flag, but yeah, Adams,
Adams is just an anchor.
That was just absolutely ugly. Yeah, that was literally like an anchor. It was like a bomb dropping.
But at least they're alternatives. And I do hope that Sizemore doesn't end up opting out. I hope they'll at least give him a shot. I'd give him a shot over Dean Anna, that much.
I'd give Dean Anna a shot, to be honest. I think that, you know,
I don't dislike Dean Anna, but I think there's more potential from Sizemore. Given that he's actually had major league success before. A couple years ago, but still.
It's interesting because these players occupy this like weird nether region in the minor leagues where like they're good enough to succeed in the minors, but they're not good enough to succeed in Major League Baseball.
Right.
So I feel like it's very interesting that the Yankees are like, well, I guess we'll just pick from that pool of players who kind of succeed in AAA but never get called up.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kudos to them for even scouting. I mean, their minor league scouting has really just scoured looking for, because I mean, last year they were like wringing their hands looking for someone who could even hit 20% below league average, and now they find a couple of guys who are like, oh yeah, they could potentially hit league average. Like, I'd take that for a replacement player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any day of the week.
Especially because in an ideal world, these guys are going to be on the bench anyway once Mark Teixeira comes back, and then you shift Kelly Johnson back to third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, and obviously it's good to have this depth too, because, you know, if Brian Roberts makes it through this entire season without going on the DL, it will be a miracle.
It would be. I mean, but you know, I'm actually liking Brian Roberts right now.
Oh, he's not bad. I just don't have confidence that he'll stay healthy.
Yeah, the thing that I've noticed that people have been pointing out is like how many pitches he's been taking.
Oh yeah, he takes a ton of pitches. It's great.
In the game against, it was the first game against Ubaldo. He took like 20 pitches.
Yeah. He doesn't get many hits, but he seems he's a tough at bat, and he's gotten a fair amount of walks.
Yeah, I think that's where his like kind of value is. I don't know how you quantify that, but he basically took an inning off of Ubaldo's game.
And that at bat tonight against Tommy Hunter, very hard fought. And
yeah,
you know, maybe if I think Camden Chat tweeted like, you know, maybe that would have been out, but you know, I don't know that Brian Roberts has the power to hit home runs anymore.
No, I don't think he does.
Maybe he'll pop one out.
But he's all right.
Hey, if D. Gordon could go deep against Max Scherzer.
Or as Vin Scully called him, Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer.
Whatever.
Vin Scully. Sounds like a weird brand of novelty t-shirts tied to your fans can sell.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was also talking about Torii Hunter's dad, which is really awkward because he was a crack addict.
And he also referenced Max Scherzer's brother, who is in brother, who's a graduate student. It's like,
yeah, that was kind of But the thing he was talking about Torii Hunter's dad, and he's like, and then one day he saw that he had a crack pipe. I think that's what you call it.
Oh God.
so naive.
Oh well, or just he got some weird notes passed to him, I'm sure. Some intern probably got fired. Anyway, moving on to Greg's question. Don't you hate pants? Also describe each of your solutions for the first base situation in a haiku.
Hmm, interesting.
Well, to answer the first question, I do hate pants.
Yeah, so do I.
All right, I'm going to try to come up with a haiku for this.
Well, I have one prepared if you guys want me to go first.
Wow.
Good, go for it.
Teixeira is out. What are the Yankees to do? Let's play a toaster.
Well done.
Okay. Without Teixeira, why not try Russ Kanzler now? No, no, no. He sucks.
Aw, but Northeastern Pennsylvania. All right, here's mine. Veteran presence, not necessary for first. Grab a mitt, JR. So, yeah. That would be nice. Or maybe Soriano can do something. Or Beltran.
Or maybe they should re-sign Jason Giambi.
Get trade for Jason Giambi from Cleveland. Except I think he's hurt.
Oh, yeah, he is. He, like, what was it? Did he break a rib or something?
I would have thought at this point he would have broken a hip.
I think he broke. Yeah, I was gonna
say, He broke a rib. He fell and broke a rib.
God, poor Giambi. I'm sorry I laughed at that, but that's just such an old person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, let's see, what was his injury?
I want to think that he was out of,
he got hit by a pitch and he broke a rib.
Oh, well. Well, anyway, that's the tweet bag. Bit of an adventurous one, but that's that. I think we can move. Do you have any 1890s British nobleman, Matthew?
I do. I have a couple we can do.
Excellent.
Great.
Okay, we'll start off with. Let's start off with Matt this week. Clarence Cross.
That sounds like a baseball player.
Yeah, it is. He played 2 seasons in the United Association, whatever that is.
It was the like the it was like basically the very very early. What year did it, do you know?
1890.
Played 1884 and 1887.
Yeah, that was like before the American League even existed.
Played for something called Altoona Mountain City.
Oh, Altoona, Pennsylvania again.
Yeah.
I'm more of a fan of salmon.
The Altoona Curve's predecessor. Did you know that the Altoona Curve's mascot is a tuna named Al Tuna?
Well, sure.
It's kind of the worst thing.
I mean, it's no porcupine.
No. It's no quills. Yeah, I'm surprised your haiku didn't involve quills.
Yeah, I needed 2 syllables, so I put toaster instead.
That's fair.
Okay, Andrew, we'll go with Granville Gordon.
We'll go with a British nobleman on that one.
Yeah, he is the 13th Marquess of Huntly.
I mean, aren't we all?
I'm actually the 16th.
Good for you.
Okay, Matt. Francis Fitzherbert.
Sounds like a British nobleman.
Yeah, okay, you guys are getting this game. He is the 15th Baron Stafford.
Where he gets getting too good.
Yeah. If I ever go in a time machine back to the 1890s, I'd be able to distinguish.
Okay, the next one for Andrew. Hugh Trenchard.
Hugh Trenchard. I'll go with a baseball player there.
No, I finally got you guys. He's the 3rd Viscount Trenchard.
forgot about the Viscount
got Trenchard. Got me there, yeah. Must have skipped over the Trenchards in history class.
Yeah, oh well.
Okay, Matt. George Daisy.
That sounds like a baseball player.
Yeah, it is. He played 1 season also for Altoona Mountain City.
Thought so.
4 at-bats, no hits, minus 100 OPS plus.
You hate
so basically, we played better than him.
Yep.
Awesome work.
Okay, and the final one we have for Andrew is Ambrose Putman.
I'm going to go with baseball player on that one.
Yep. You guys got this now. He played 4 years. Actually, 3 of those were on the Yankees.
Hmm. When?
Actually not. Yeah, they're not decent numbers, small sample size, but.
What
this
when
first
was
year?
This?
1903 to 1906.
Must have been one of the original Yankees then.
Well, yeah. When I look at the team page, it's the Highlanders, so.
Yeah. Teammate of Willie Keeler, Jack Cheesebro.
Yeah, there's Jack Cheesebro.
The funny thing is that. I'm pretty sure that's exactly how it's pronounced. Like, it looks like it should be pronounced Chesbro, but I think I read that it's actually pronounced Cheesebro. Jack Cheesebro.
Cheesebro.
And his spitballs. And his 41 wins. Okay, so that's it for the 1890s British Nobleman game.
Okay, the year he played with Cheesebro, Cheesebro pitched 324.2 innings.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Obviously, he has the will to win.
Yep.
They don't make them like they used to.
I was looking at Haas Radburn's page earlier because that's just fun to do, and he threw like
ridiculous.
He threw like 730 innings in 1884 or 1885, whatever the season where he won 59 games. He started 73 games, completed all of them, finished two others, and had like 730 innings. And I'm just thinking, like, how did you not die afterwards? He pitched like over like 2,000 more innings in his career after that.
Yeah. In his 1883 season, he had a win-loss record of 48-25.
Modest.
With 68 games start, 632 innings. Kind of helps when you allow 0.1 home runs per nine.
Yeah, they just didn't really do homers then.
Yeah, he had a WAR of 8.4. That's pretty incredible considering he pitched 600 innings.
Yeah. It's like more than like top three starters combined these days.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. At this point, we can move on to the Yankee. Not yet. Okay.
I found a teammate of Putman and Cheeseborough named Snake Welts. And he had a brother who also played some baseball named Hooks Wilts.
Oh, I think I've heard of Hooks Wilts.
Snake.
I haven't heard of Snake Wilts, though.
Snake Griffin.
Can't trust Snake Wilts.
Yeah, Hooks Wilts played a lot. Played 12 seasons.
There are three Major League Baseball players with the first name Snake.
That's wonderful. I know Babe Ruth was once a roommate of a guy named Ping Bodie.
Ping.
Yeah, Ping. And one of my favorite pitchers of all time was this guy on the White Sox named Pants Roland. His nickname, he was just known by Pants.
Why does nobody in this period of time until like 1940 have like a real name?
Because nicknames were just better. I think it's pretty amusing that like Three Finger Brown is like known as Three Finger Brown because he had like an accident with like a farming equipment as a child, and they're just like, yeah, we're just gonna call you Three Finger Brown.
That's funny.
In these days, I remember there was this one pitcher who had kind of like six fingers, kind of. Like the six was kind of a stub, so that would be like we called him like Six Finger Smith or something.
Well, also there are like tons of players you can find throughout this time period where they're like Germany Schaefer was their name.
Mm-hmm. Or Irish.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Or Germany Smith.
Or Dutch Leonard, Dutch Reuter.
Well.
And then there's one of my favorites, this guy who was deaf, they called him Dummy Hoy.
Yeah.
Obviously didn't practice the art of subtlety.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Any other good names? Or should we move on?
I'm trying to remember, but when I was going through names earlier today to try and find some for the game, there was one I found, which wouldn't work for the game, but it was amazing, because it was, like, totally vaguely racist.
Great.
I can't remember what it is, though.
We'll not put that in the podcast. Well.
Okay, well, unless you find it, we'll move on to the...
Yeah, no, I can't remember what it is.
Okay, so we'll move on to the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. It wasn't a very good one, but, you know, whatever. The week wasn't great. All right, Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
I'm just going to take him, Jacoby Ellsbury.
Fair. He did get, like, all the hits.
Yep.
So, and I really shouldn't be surprised or anything, but I was annoyed that, like, of the Yankees fans who were there, they booed when he, like,
Yeah.
Popped up in the eighth inning with a runner on third. It's like, whatever. Yeah, he should have gotten the run home, but he's been getting so many hits.
It's Yankees fans.
Classic. All right, Matt P., your Yankee of the week.
Tanaka. All the way. Yeah, it's his first week pitching in Major League Baseball, coming from a completely different country. Basically, just like a slightly different sport, too. Different size ball, different mound, different stadiums, different players, different language. And he strikes out 18 batters.
Not bad.
So
I think better than, like, Darvish's first two starts, too.
Yeah, Darvish's first start was horrible. Mm-hmm. So, and he's, especially after all the, like, Adam Jones criticism and, like, striking him out.
Yeah, that was pretty great. And it was also, I also was glad that, like, you know, the first batter he faced, Melky Cabrera hit the home run, and it's like, oh, God. People are going to be all over this if he gives up more, but he's like, nah, we're good.
Yeah, he just shakes it off and just like, all right, I'll just strike everybody else out.
Yep.
Just, you know, engages in Tanaka time and does Tanaka things.
Yep. All right, my Yankee of the week, it's because he really deserves it, it'll be Yandervis Solarte or Yanhervis, yep. I'm still not quite sure how to pronounce it.
Solarte.
Well, I figured out Solarte. I'm not quite sure if it's Yanhervis or Yandervis.
I think it's Yanhervis.
That would make more sense.
Yandervis.
Maybe. I enjoy that these like random baseball connections, and he's like the nephew of Roger Cedeno, who I remember was like stole a ton of bases.
Small world.
He really deserves the Yankee of the Week just because he's gotten so many hits, got off to a great start, and with so many of the people on the offense not really off to the best starts, it was refreshing to have that in the lineup. And yeah. It's good that, like, you know, he started doing this right when Teixeira got hurt, so that it was an easy move to just be like, okay, well, you'll just be the starting third baseman for a little while. Okay, so that's that. And the Mitre of the Week, Matt F.
I'll go with Brian McCann.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll come around eventually, but it'd be nice if he'd do something right now.
Yeah, I thought maybe he'd have his chance in the game today when they intentionally walked Beltran in front of him. Like, come on, angry McCann. Bring it out.
Nope,
but then he just...
Not today.
Then he just popped up or I forget what.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Matt P., your Mitre of the Week.
Mine is going to be, this is tough. I'm going to have to say Sean Kelly because of today.
Harsh.
Nova's kind of my other Mitre, but I'm going to say because for selfish reasons, Sean Kelly was put onto my fantasy team today because I thought he would get more saves because he took David Robertson's place and instead he smote me and blew the game.
Well, he did get the save the other day, so...
Yes.
But that was before he was on your fantasy team, I guess.
Yes. I didn't draft until after that, because, you know, I didn't know that David Roberts was on the DL until after, so...
Right.
So, well, curse you, Sean Kelly, until tomorrow when you get the save.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, Ivan Nova would have been a good choice, and that is my Mitre of the Week, because he needs to step up his game. He hasn't looked sharp at all in his first two starts. And he's the... I think I mentioned this in my post on the relievers the other day, but he's the one starter that I feel completely fine with going deep into the game, because he's young. He threw, like, two or three complete games toward the end of the season last year, so he showed that he can give distance. And if he's sharp, then he can pitch, like, you know, 7, 8, even 9 innings if needed. And that could really be helpful to the Yankees with their bullpen not as strong without David Robertson. But he only went, like, 3 2/3 the other day and, like, 5 2/3, if that, in his opening start. So if they need a bit more out of him, come on, Nova.
Come on.
Yeah. Weren't the Orioles a team he owned last year, too?
Yeah, he threw, like, two complete games. One of them was that first game back in the first or second game back in the starting rotation when we're like, oh, maybe his career is back. And then later on was when he shut out the Orioles.
Yeah.
But
that was the first one was the weird one where he pitched 9 innings, then they walked. It was like a Vernon Wells walk-off hit.
Yes, I remember that one. Yeah. He needs to do a little bit better. All right. You guys have anything else?
Nope.
Any more fun games to pull out? Or fun names?
Nope.
Yeah, no.
Well, maybe next time we'll just randomly bring amusing names. We can't find any more 1890s baseball players / British noblemen. We'll figure something else out.
Barney Gilligan.
Pretty great. Oh, man. Rugged Odor. Oh, wait, that's now.
Fatty Briody.
If Bartolo Colon played like 100 years ago, they'd totally just call him Fatty Colon.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Did you see the gif of him grabbing his stomach and jiggling it?
Yeah, and there was a Notgraphs article that was like corresponded an audio clip, and it was like, me hungry.
SB Nation dubbed Pony by Genuine over it.
Oh, man. Bartolo Colon, he's so much fun. And his bunting attempts are just a delight. He's eventually going to get a hit, and it'll be great.
It'll be beautiful.
And it'll probably be his only hit of the season in, like, 80 at-bats.
Probably.
Okay. Well, that's it for the Pinstripe Alley podcast this week. Hopefully the Yankees have a good weekend series against the Red Sox, and we'll be able to have some fun stuff to talk about next week. We'll probably record at the same time. You can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. Follow the Yankees Gifts account, and that's at Yankees Gifts, obviously. And like us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Those are always welcome. And please feel free to tweet at us any questions you have about the Yankees, or post in the TweetBag fan shot that I put up. And I think that's it. So from the Matthews and me, and I don't know. So the Matthews and me. That doesn't sound right. Damn.
Yeah, that's correct. Because you'd say like from me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Say from I.
All right. Yeah, you're right. Okay. From I. No. From the Matthews and me at the Pinstripe Alley podcast. Here's hoping that David Robertson and Mark Teixeira have a speedy recovery, and that hopefully the bullpen does not die. Have a great week.